Hello, my homeschool mom friend. Are you ready for a power-packed episode today? I had the blessed opportunity to sit down with Abby from M is for Mama. I don't know if you're familiar with her or not, but you will be by the end of this episode. Abby has been encouraging moms for many years, whether it was through her blog or through her mini blogging on social media, but she's written a couple of books as well, and she also had the podcast. But today we are going to dive into and hear just a bit more about just her, her life and homeschooling, her children, her beautiful family. And I'm excited for the encouragement that you are going to get today. And she's going to speak right to your heart as a mom who actually was homeschooled and is now homeschooling her children. So sit tight. Here we go. Welcome to Little by Little Homeschool Podcast, where you'll learn tips and strategies that will empower you to home educate your children. I'm Lee Nguyen, a homeschool mom of over 12 years, which includes two graduates. When I started homeschooling, I was pretty much on my own and was desperate for encouragement and help. My mission is to be a source of encouragement and help to you. Whether you are just beginning your homeschool journey or you're deep into the homeschool lifestyle, Little by Little Homeschool wants to help you stay the course, because all the time you are investing into your children is completely worth it. If you're ready to take your homeschool to new levels, keep listening. Welcome to today's podcast episode. I have a special guest here, and I am excited to hear a little bit more. So, Abby, welcome to the podcast, and can you share a little bit about yourself? And we're going to dive in deep in a bit here, but just kind of let the listener know exactly a little bit more about you.
Yeah, sure. My name is Abby Halberstadt. I have a podcast that I always start with: Happy Wife, Mom at a 10, Bible-Believing Christian, because those are maybe not in that order, kind of some of the bedrocks of who I am at this point in life. I am a 41-year-old mom of 10 kids ranging from ages 3 and 3, those are twins, up to a 17, almost 18-year-old boy. So we had 10 kids in 14 years. We might have more, who knows? The Lord's kind of the one that decides, not kind of the one, the Lord is the one that decides that. And we have been homeschooling all the way through. I was homeschooled myself way back in the 80s and 90s. And was really blessed to have a mom that wanted to be countercultural and really do something new. At the time, it was new. Of course, home education is not new. It's something that has existed for millennia, but new at the time in our country, even to being legal in many states. And so she was a real trailblazer for that. And I am really grateful for her efforts, my parents' efforts, to turn the tide for us culturally. And we seek to pass that along to our children. I am an author, and I have a couple of best-selling books, M is for Mama and Hard is Not the Same Thing as Bad, and I'm working on my third, and we're writing some study guides that go with them and all kinds of stuff. So there's always some project or deadline or something in the middle of peanut butter sandwiches and wiping bottoms and potty training and teaching letters and staying up till 11:30 to talk to teens that want to tell you about their night and their day and the things that they've been doing. And I absolutely love the range of ages that I get to parent right now. I hear from a lot of readers that are very overwhelmed by that dynamic of feeling like you have to kind of go all the way down to being on your knees on level with a 3-year-old, and then all the way up to, like I said, staying up really late with a teenager. But I actually really feel privileged to have all of those ages in my home, and I'm dreading any of them leaving. Thankfully, our oldest is staying for a while, it seems, because he's working on a boot camp for software development, which is what my husband Sean does. He's self-employed. We've built a couple of houses together. My husband and his dad do pretty much all of the construction. So that's been an exciting adventure. The most recent exciting adventure is the unwilling repetition of part of that rebuild, because our house flooded back in April and our entire downstairs was ripped apart. And so we just got back into our house 3 weeks ago, and it's not utter chaos anymore, but you know, it still feels like we're kind of making baby steps each day to move one mess to another room, make that room clean, and then move some of the mess back in a more orderly way. So I'm a fitness instructor on the quote unquote side, in the margins, I guess I would say. I've done that for 16 or 17 years and just really enjoy, you know, being around my family and spending time with my kids and being able to minister to women that I might never get to meet this side of heaven, but it's just really cool that I get to encourage them.
There's a lot going on in your life. Yep, and I think that every woman listening can relate to some part or big parts, small parts of that. So thank you for sharing a little bit about that. I think every part is interesting. We could like dive into every single thing, but let's start off with your most recent book. I'm excited you're writing a third book. That's really thrilling. Where did the phrase "hard is not the same thing as bad" come from?
So I talk about this in the intro. In fact, I had a reader message me the other day and was like, okay, I just started your book and I guess I didn't know much about it, but I think it must be for younger moms because you're talking about toddlers. Do I keep going? And I was like, yes, I did not write this for younger moms exclusively. Younger moms will benefit, but the scriptural principles in there can apply to anyone, because I think the phrase hard is not the same thing as bad is something that everybody needs to be reminded of. I think we're all kind of challenge averse, difficulty averse, like, it's hard. I don't enjoy it. I don't really want to keep pushing through. I don't see the good in this. You know, I think that's where a lot of our brains go naturally. That's where mine can go naturally very easily. And so I do start out the book talking about my twin toddlers, because I have another set of toddlers who were twins or who were toddlers. How many years ago? At this point, that would have been 8 or 9 years ago. They're 11 now. Very, very challenging toddlerhood. And as I was walking with my friend on the trail, this is my friend that illustrates my books as well. She's an artist. And we were just chatting and I was talking to her about all of these DMs I was getting that basically were asking, you know, you have 5 kids. I'm in kind of the trenches with you, but I quote unquote only have 1 or 2. So you're a little farther ahead of me. How do I get kind of around this obstacle? Not how do I get through it, not how do I learn from it, not how do I grow and mature, but like, give me your tips and tricks so that I can just get out of this mess kind of thing. And I was not complaining, but I was like, I don't have this magic bullet for them, because no one does. There are tried and true principles from scripture which we can apply to every child in every circumstance. Honoring God, teaching them his ways, being consistent, being merciful, being kind and loving and full of grace and full of consistency. I just like, yes, those matter. But are they going to produce an instant result that makes your difficulty go away? No, they're probably not. I mean, maybe if some miracle occurs in one particular instance or with a very compliant child, maybe it might feel like you just poured a magic solution on it and then, you know, cleared itself up. Most of the time, though, the hard that you're walking through is given to you by God, very specifically to grow your character. You know, we know that character and hope and perseverance, those things are all kind of mixed up together in scripture, and one leads to the other. And that's a good thing, but it doesn't feel very good. A lot of times it feels very bad when we're not sleeping or when we're being screamed at constantly, maybe times two, or when we can't ever get out the door on time. We always feel like a fool for showing up late and running in the door without shoes on, the kids and, you know, jam on the face. And we just want to look put together and in control. And that's just not usually what the Lord has for us, especially when we're moms with young children. And so I said to my friend, I know, but the thing is, I wish they would understand that hard is not the same thing as bad. Just because it's hard doesn't mean that it's evil or that God's punishing them or that they need to escape from it. She said, well, okay, tell them that. Like, if you don't know what to tell them that. And I thought, well, that's probably just going to run people off. But I started to, and I was just flabbergasted by how much it resonated with so many people that, and it's the subtitle of my book with that same quote. The subtitle is "The Perspective Shift That Could Completely Change the Way You Mother." And the idea, and I think it could really just, you could substitute another verb in there, the way you parent, the way you wife, the way you are an employee, the way that you do everything as unto the Lord, that you go, oh, this thing all of a sudden became not a trial and a tribulation and a suffering, although sometimes hard things are, not a persecution from someone whose thumb is upon me, but instead a gift, perhaps, to recognize that I can be something that I am not currently in Christ's strength.
I think that our natural inclination in our culture now is to avoid hard things because we equate that with bad. And so your phrase is, it sounds very simple, but when you stop and really think and meditate on it, you're like, wow, okay, that really is, it's a lot deeper than it comes to as the surface. And we just want to avoid hard things. We want to avoid difficult things. And this can go for a lot of things. Like you said, motherhood, being a wife, maybe being a daughter, maybe being a friend can go for us physically even, and trying to maybe get back into shape or get back into a better, because I know you're talking about being a fitness instructor as well, just getting to a place where we are more healthy. And that can be really hard. So why do women and mothers, especially in our day and age, why do we need to hear this message that hard doesn't always mean bad?
Well, I'd say one of the main reasons is because social media is telling us the opposite. Social media is telling us to avoid children altogether. I just had someone message me the other day and say that my podcasts have been helping her to combat what she was getting fed constantly from TikTok specifically, which there are various conspiracy theories floating around saying that China is feeding like our young people things to try to diminish our society. I don't know if it's true or not, but honestly, it would make sense. It would be a really smart way to convince a society to underperform, to have this deluge of memes and social media posts validating our already lazy tendencies, our already escapist mindset, our already self-indulgent ways of doing things so often. And so she said she ended up deleting TikTok, because it was inundating her with this message that she was stupid to have had children in the first place, that they were going to limit her, that they were draining her of her resources, and that she was being persecuted by them, basically. And some of them are literally blatantly saying so. I've seen so many videos come through that your jaw just drops to the floor, that anyone could say this about children, but we have a culture that really dehumanizes small children starting in the womb. And it makes sense that that mindset would continue once they're outside of the womb, even if it shifts a little bit or we turn it into something quote unquote funny. So I think we need this perspective shift, because we have slowly boiled ourselves in this pot of water that is just from Satan. I mean, I'm just going to call it what it is. It is evil. And this mindset of resisting God's will for our lives as Christians, because the Bible tells us that to give thanks in all circumstances and to praise God is his will for us in Christ Jesus. So if we're constantly complaining about our circumstances, if we are constantly saying, I can't believe you did this to me, why, Lord, why? Not that he can't handle our questions, but if the attitude is never one of thank you for the opportunity to grow, I praise you that you are sovereign in these hard circumstances, we are going to find our hearts poisoned toward our Creator, and that is a very bad thing.
There's a big difference there between complaining. I feel like complaining, and I feel like I see it in people, that when you're complaining, you're not looking for a solution. You're not looking for getting to the other side of it. You're just looking to vent, and there's not taking the steps that are needed in order to actually get to that point. When you're just complaining, when you're just kind of maybe unloading on your husband or a friend, and just to kind of get those emotions out is one thing. But I do see a lot of complaining. And like you're saying, this is the dehumanization of children and just the mocking of them and not looking at them as image bearers and as having a soul. And I get that. I mean, I've been there in the trenches with a couple little kids and being like, I can't, you know, who am I anymore? I don't even think I'm a person. And probably with that mindset that you are talking about, is thinking this is so bad and, you know, it's hard, so it's bad, instead of what can I learn from it? And sure, I now have the perspective of looking back and saying, okay, children really are a joy. There are some times it's difficult and there's a lot of trials. So thank you for kind of unpacking that a little bit and giving the world that phrase, giving moms that phrase to be able to put words, maybe what their thoughts are and the emotions that they're experiencing. So I know in the beginning, you share a little bit about an intro to yourself and homeschooling. So you share a little bit about your story of homeschooling, because you have a broad range. And I know now that you're a second generation homeschooler. Mm-hmm. That's so exciting. I get so excited hearing about that, because I have just hopes that my children will also be second generation homeschoolers, that they will then homeschool their children. So you've always homeschooled your kids. Was that always the plan? Was it possibly the plan? So just tell me a little bit about your story of homeschooling.
Yeah, I would have told you growing up that I was going to homeschool my kids. I did tell people growing up that I was going to homeschool my kids. It was really not even a question for me. And I think that's because my mom did a really good job of balancing the academics and the free time. She did not care one whit if my best friend, who lived a mile up the road and also homeschooled, and I got up at 5 a.m. and did all of our core subjects and got done at 8 a.m. and then played all day. I mean, creative free play we're learning is so important to our brain's development, so important to our ability to problem solve. And I don't know that she was reading articles on that, but she just intuitively understood we needed this ability. I mean, I can remember our, you know, doing lemonade stands and then riding our bikes up the road, figuring out how much we needed to pay for the gum, you know, and the treat that we wanted, riding our bikes. I mean, just in the sunshine all the time. And I think that if you're talking to someone who is homeschool averse, which I know that's not your audience, they're going to assume that I probably came out of that experience not being able to read or write or function or anything like that. And I was a very high performer in college and was kind of grade obsessed, went to college really early, got done at 19, was teaching high school Spanish to kids that were like a year and a half younger than I was. And so I don't think that that's going to be everybody. I'm definitely wired toward academics in the way that God made my brain. But we can't just assume because you didn't have this conventional education that you had more freedom in your schedule that you're somehow going to suffer academically. So I want to encourage young moms that are listening to that, that you absolutely can have that freedom. You can still learn a ton. You can still excel in academics, but you can also not be chained to a desk. And I know we hear this a lot of time in the homeschool community, but we're not trying to recreate school at home. And I say that having taught high school Spanish and English and ESL for 10 years to high schoolers and knowing what that really structured classroom looks like, knowing what it looks like to try to teach foreign language to kids in 90-minute blocks sometimes and keep their attention for that amount of time, it is just, it's brutal. It's really, really hard. And I loved it. But at the same time, you just feel like I am kind of fighting a system that is stacked against me. And so we have that incredible freedom. So having that freedom, having parents, I mean, this was the 90s. This is a different era, but our parents would drop us off downtown in our little downtown square. And we would go from the card shop and read little nerdy cards to the library where the librarians were like, what are you doing here? Why are you here at 11 a.m.? You know, kind of thing, to the little soda shop, which was like this vintage little, but we just experienced so much while our peers were sitting at desks. And I was so grateful for that. I mean, I was aware enough of how unique my experience was that I wanted my kids to have that as well. That motivation was strong. So my husband graduated from a teeny tiny public school. He's the valedictorian of like 14 whole people, little bitty school. And I wouldn't have said that he was homeschool averse or pro homeschool. He was fairly uninformed, but he trusted my passion. He trusted my interest. And he was like, you know, we could go one way or the other, but hey, you're willing to put in the effort. You want to do the work. You've experienced it yourself. You have this mom who's willing to invest in you and your kids. And so we'll give it a try. And here we are. Ezra graduated last year. My oldest graduated last year, a year early. And we started him early. So, you know, that's 14 years of homeschooling. So we're 15 years into this. And my husband wouldn't have it any other way at this point. He's like, yes, this is who we are. This is what we love. This is what we do. This is how our children thrive. This is what works for our family. So that's where we are at this point.
I think it's neat that he was open to it. I kind of experienced the same sort of thing. My husband was like, what? Because when I said, I think we need a homeschool. So my kids started off in the public school and homeschooling was not on my radar at all. And I came home and I told him that I think God's calling us to homeschool. And he thought I was crazy because it was not me, not my personality, not at all. But he trusted me, just like your husband trusted you. Like if you have this passion, if God's given you this passion and desire, then what does it hurt to try it out? And then they become like huge proponents of it. And I'll hear my husband sometimes like, yeah, we homeschool. I'm like, we do. I mean, he's very supportive and he works and provides the income. But when it comes to the day-to-day and the lessons and the math lessons and teaching all the little things, it was kind of me. So it's just kind of funny how he's like adopted it and he's like a champion and telling everybody to homeschool. And
I love it.
Yeah, it's really neat. I love your story of how you were homeschooled. It gives me a lot of hope. And I think it gives a lot of hope to the moms that are listening too, because we have a lot of questions. We have a lot of concerns. And then it's not even just in our own head. It's from other people too, right?
Yeah.
Who are just doubting you, who will say, are you sure you can do that? Or the question of, are you going to really homeschool through high school? And I just remember getting that all the time. And the day my oldest started high school, nobody asked me again. And I was like, thank goodness we are finally over all of those questions, because it was just constantly makes you question yourself, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for sharing all of that. I'm inspired now just by your mom and your parents doing this. And so let me ask you, was it legal or illegal at that time? Like, did you have to keep like, well, you guys were out and about? Because I hear in some states you had to keep the curtains closed and not let anybody know.
Right. So we're in Texas. And I think that when my mom started homeschooling my brother and chose to keep him home from, say, preschool and kindergarten, it was technically illegal. I think it was in the courts being appealed. The process of making it fully legal was already in the works, and she was petitioning and picketing and signing and voting, and she's very active that way. So we have her to thank for many freedoms here in Texas, her and moms like her. But I think technically for my brother, who is 4 years older than I am, it was slightly illegal. She was quite the rebel.
Well, tell her thank you from me. I always love when I hear of moms who were there on the front lines in the 80s and 90s. And I'm so thankful for them because they've paved the way legally. I mean, really, should we even have to have, that's a whole nother episode and conversation right there.
Right.
But no, it's inspiring. And it's also inspiring to hear your story of how, we'll say, quote unquote, socialized you were from being homeschooled and knowing how to interact, going into town and just being familiar with how to interact with adults, which just sounds so, I'm sure you get that question too. How will they be socialized? And like, have a conversation with them and you'll know.
Yeah. And, you know, I always say you can argue that some homeschoolers are quote unquote weird, whatever that standard is. And I'm going to turn right back around as a former public school teacher and look at your weird public school kids and go, you know, it may not be the education system. It may just be that some kids are going to hit a little different. We were at a church event the other day and there was a homeschool kid and he was just kind of a gawky, skinny, tall teenage boy, kind of your typical slightly awkward looking 15-year-old. And he was standing behind beside a public school kid and they were chatting, who was equally gawky and skinny. And I was like, you could not determine between the two of these who's who. They both are just teenage boys doing the best they can kind of thing. And neither one of them are quite there yet, you know? So we have to be careful making those stereotypes on either side.
Right. That's funny. And the gawky 15-year-old boy, like there's nothing more awkward than that, I think. So what are some of the benefits? Because you have a wide range of ages that you're homeschooling. What are some of the benefits of homeschooling across that wide spectrum of ages and the learning differences between all your children?
So I would say that with as wide of a range that I have, as many children as I have, we're doing a whole lot of group learning whenever we can. The benefit of an out-of-the-box mindset is that I don't feel compelled to be doing Texas history with my sixth grader and then American history with my fourth grade. I mean, like, we are learning all kinds of things together all the time. Something strikes our interest and we look it up. Have you ever heard the term home squirreling?
Home squirreling. No, I've not.
Squirrel. Go chase this. Go do that. Learn about this. Let's see what we're interested in here. Let's go look up a video of that. And we are in a homeschool co-op, for which I am really grateful given my current schedule and deadlines, because that keeps them with assignments they have to turn in and knowing like what's due this day on this thing that we need to do, which is a nice structure for me. I don't think everybody needs that, but in this particular season for the last 3 years, it's been really, really helpful for our family. I also am very determined to raise independent learners and independent workers. I myself was one, even though it was just my brother and I. Everybody always assumes I must have come from a giant family if I have a giant family, but it was just my brother and I. We're 4 years apart. My mom would have loved to have more, and that's just not what the Lord had in store for her. And so by the time, and we had a very limited income. My dad was the breadwinner, but he did not have a degree. My mom did, but my mom was the one at home teaching us. And so I remember by about age 8, I was spending time in our local community college library doing my school because my mom was an adjunct professor at the college. And so we would have several hours where we were working by ourselves. I was 8, my brother was 12. So that's pretty early, you know, but I knew what I was supposed to be doing. She had consistently taught me what I needed to be doing. I was a good reader. I was good at basic math. I could read instructions. I could apply. I could use critical thinking skills. I could memorize, and, you know, all these things that, yes, we are there to facilitate. Yes, we are there to teach. Yes, we are there to notice where their interests are and help those to grow and to expand. But we are not there to be the only funnel of knowledge they will ever get information from, right? And so just take that pressure off your shoulders right now especially in this day and age, because we have online things, we have co-ops, you can get a group together. Tomorrow we have a group of girls coming. I started a homeschool girls group 2-3 years ago where we get together 2 Fridays a month, and it's wide range of ages. I mean, I think we have like 7 through 22 or something like that. And whoever hosts takes on everything. So I'm hosting tomorrow. So I'll provide all of the snacks. I'll provide the activities. We're having a tea party. We'll learn a little bit about the history of tea. We'll learn a little bit about famous tea drinkers, what the best kinds are and why, and, you know, just things like that. I mean, is this information you have to have in your life? No. Is it broadening the scope of your knowledge and helping you to interact with a wide range of people? Because I don't know about you, but I would much rather have kind children who have generous hearts and are other-centered than math geniuses. If they happen to be math geniuses too, great. But my goal is to have my children love God and love people and not be completely uninformed about the world, and to be diligent to teach them, of course. So my older kids are very independent in their learning. We read together, and I do a lot of grading of their papers and suggestions on ways to improve. And I'm required to do things by our co-op, but I'm not standing over them, say, read your next paragraph of Greek mythology. What chapter of history are you on? I'm asking, do we need to read science together today? Are you done with this? While I have 3 math students lined up beside me, because I'm not going to have math done at different times of the day in different rooms when I could answer all the questions at once. So some of it's just common sense, like group what you can. Some of it is the ability of an older kid to answer a question, because they can answer fraction questions too. I'm not relying on it, but it's nice that they're there. And some of it is just the knowledge that teaching your children to be independent learners, teaching them to love reading, teaching them to love literature, teaching them to work diligently at something, even if they don't love it, are all good life skills in general.
The raising independent learners is something that I've talked about, even I've had episodes about it, because it's so important. And I've seen that if a child loves to learn and knows how to learn, they won't stop learning. Yeah. It might be different than another child, and letting them pursue what they're interested in instead of the constant, you have to do this. I mean, I understand the younger years, we need to get our math facts figured out and we need to know how to read. And once you have those things, everything else can be applied. And when I look back at my 3 kids, even just their high school, it's just very, very different. And it's so fun when either, whether it's a 7-year-old or a 17-year-old that shares something and you're like, where'd you learn that from? Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, I learned it just the other night. My kiddo was telling me, and I was like, where'd you learn? He's like, science. I'm like, did I teach you that? Because I don't remember any of that. He's like, no, I just kind of like, perfect. This is perfect, because they won't stop learning. So that's great. And I love your advice of doing as much as you can together, because there's no reason for different histories for every different age range. Some the older ones are going to pick up on more and remember more. The younger ones are probably going to roll out of the room and maybe just be building Legos, right? Yep. But they pick up, they hear little things, and it's kind of funny how they'll then repeat that later on, maybe to dad or to somebody else. And you're like, oh, they really were listening.
They were listening. Like, yep.
Huh? Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. So what advice would you give to a mom in the trenches of homeschooling and raising her young children? Will all of this, all this time and all this effort that she is putting in right now, will it be worth it in the end?
That is literally the topic of my 3rd book. That's not just in homeschooling, but in life. Yep. But when I publish my 3rd book, because the book publishing process is long, I will officially, well, I'll officially have an adult child as of May in the government's eyes, but I will officially have had an adult child for a while and be able to answer that question in everybody's eyes, because there are definitely moms that are like, I'm not going to listen to this lady because she hasn't, at the first time of my 1st book being published, hasn't graduated a child yet, or doesn't have an adult child yet, or hasn't been gone through this milestone. And while I understand that mindset, I think we have to be really careful to say, like, biblical principles are true no matter where you're getting them from. Like, we gotta be able to discern, like, oh, this is good, right, and true, even if this person doesn't have the exact same life experience that I do or hasn't gone through the same trials that I have. So my answer to that is 100% it will be worth it. But it may be a little bit of a different perspective than you expect, because I think it's worth it because of what the Lord is doing in your life, not because of the children that you produce. Because we cannot guarantee an outcome. We just can't. It is so tempting to say, if I put in X amount of effort, if I get up X number of times a night, if I read X number of books to my children, if I am consistent to discipline in this very specific way on this particular Tuesday after 4:30 p.m., it's going to work. And I will put these coins in the slot and out will pop a productive, compliant, God-loving, successful child. And that, while there are principles that apply, while there are paths to follow that we know align with God's law and his word and his ways and his truth, which is the only truth, we don't know exactly the path that he's going to take them on specifically. So yes, it is worth it because it's what the Lord has called you to, and obeying God is always worth it. We're finishing up reading The Hiding Place with, well, anybody that's listening, whether that's the sort of the three-year-olds all the way up to the teenagers who have actually read it a couple of times themselves as well. And it's that Corrie Ten Boom quote about the only safe place is in the center of God's will. And so if you're looking for a safe answer, if you're looking for a guaranteed outcome being worth it, I cannot give that to you. If you are looking for it's being worth it to serve God because God is good and he is worthy of our worship and our service, then yes, it is.
I think if we look back, even if you're only a couple years into homeschooling or motherhood, we should look and see a big difference and see a difference in our sanctification. Mm. And I've said that motherhood has been the biggest sanctifier for me. I grew up in a Christian home and went astray during college and came back to the Lord and just even stronger. And just motherhood was just really, really dope. And then homeschooling, yeah, with them being home all of the time. And we should look back. And so I'm 21 years into the motherhood. I'm like, I don't even recognize who I was. And that was fine who I was then. And I shouldn't feel ashamed of that. But seeing the growth is definitely, and so that's just, as I'm thinking now and to what you said, I hadn't really thought of it in that part. Usually we think of it when it comes to the kids. Is it worth it for the kids? But it's worth it for the growth and the work that the Lord does in our own lives.
Yeah, well, and I can think of multiple families I know. I'm thinking of one particularly. Homeschooling family on the surface seemed like they were doing everything right. Turns out the dad was a philanderer, left the family. Mom has to go to work. Younger kids can't be homeschooled. Some have clung to the Lord. Some have not. If you were to just look at their lives on paper, the way that it's quote unquote supposed to look for a homeschooling family and the results you're quote unquote supposed to get, many homeschooling families might shy away from it and say, that's not worth it. And yet the Lord was not surprised by any of that. You know, our sin is wrong no matter what. And our agency in our sin brings consequences and we have responsibility. But we can't say, God didn't know this was coming, you know, therefore it didn't turn out right, therefore it wasn't worth it. We have to be really careful to praise God in the good and the bad and the hard and the easy.
That's a good last reminder. So the listener is listening to this and maybe they're familiar with you, maybe they're not. Where can we point them? Where can they hear more from you?
Yeah, sure. I have been blogging for about 13 years at msformama.net. And you can also find me microblogging on social media, particularly at Instagram, on Instagram at m.is.4.mama. I have those two books that I've written, which you can find, MS for Mama and Heart is Not the Same Thing as Bad, pretty much anywhere books are sold, or you can order them directly from me if you would like a signed copy and a sticker, which is a fun little perk as a reminder of Heart is Not the Same Thing as Bad, particularly. And you can find that information in my shop link on my msformama.net blog. I also am a podcaster at MS for Mama. I make it easy for you there and give you weekly encouragement every Wednesday.
Perfect. And I will drop all those links in the show notes so everybody can go and give Abby a follow on either your favorite social media or blogging or listening on podcasts as well, and then grab her book. So thank you for joining me today, Abby.
That was so fun. Thank you for having me.
One of the things that I greatly admire about Abby is that she knows what she believes, she knows why, and she's so articulate in being able to explain that. I hope that today's episode has also conveyed that to you and that you feel inspired, you know your why for what you are doing, and that you also understand that sometimes in the trenches of homeschooling and motherhood, things are hard. However, as she says, hard is not the same thing as bad. So let's lean into that. And like I mentioned, I will put in the show notes all the links for where you can find Abby, follow her on social media, listen to her podcast as well, or check out her blog, her website. But thank you, friend, for listening to today's episode, and we'll be right back here on the podcast in a couple more days. Thank you for listening, friend. I'd love to connect with you more. You can find social media links in the show notes and share this episode with a friend who could use a boost to her homeschool. See you back here real soon.